let me start. Yeah, with some announcements about the program, the last newsletter has to be revised. So next week, the program will be as announced, Religion and the Decline of Magic, where I've appropriated the title of a recent book by a British historian, great book, to talk about the ideas of Max Weber, sort of Puritanism, like that. The following week is yet to be announced because the Sunday with Jane Farwell, originally scheduled for February 6th, has been postponed to the 13th. And this will be a program that will perhaps last the full day. We'll start at 10, and Jane will lead a Sunday program on fun and games and things like that. She is from Folklore Village. Then we'll have a potluck dinner. And then Jane will continue leading a program on games for adults and children in the afternoon. The 20th, Lois Hagstrom will lead her bicentennial slideshow on early 19th century American art and nature, things like that. And the 27th, we'll have our Schubert program, for I'm still delinquent, but we'll have some performances by members of the society in addition to this record. Further announcements. Pat?
Want to welcome some long-lost travelers back, Avis and Roland Perry. And I also want to report that John Lawrence seems to be getting along all right. I don't know whether many of you know, he had ruptured appendix over a week ago and was getting along fine. And that surgery had a setback this week, but seems to be getting along fine again. He's in Madison General. And I'll let Rachel announce about the board meeting.
About the board meeting, but I guess I can. It's here tomorrow evening downstairs at 7:30, and we welcome anybody, everybody, come find out what goes on. The other announcement I had was that on Friday evening, I would like to welcome any women from the church who would like to come to my house for a session. I would call it full session, but that seems very inappropriate.
Him session.
Not that. Anyway, I don't know. We talked about having themes for these meetings and all. And the last time we met, which was in November, several members thought they'd like very much to talk about work for women and jobs and how to get jobs. So on, how to apply. So I think I'll stick to that, and I would welcome anyone to come. I'm looking for a job myself right now. So, and bring any kind of material of which you think might be helpful for getting jobs. Any leads, any avenues to take, or counseling, or advice, or things of this sort. And that will be at 7:30 at my house. 5209 Tolman Terrace. If you want any more information or a ride or anything, call me.
We have a program for the meeting scheduled immediately after the session. It's had to be very quick.
That's because there's cross-country skiing this afternoon, too. There are some open, at least for John Lewis, you're always welcome to make suggestions for programs, whether or not you want to take the responsibility for putting the programs on. You're always welcome to take the responsibility for putting programs on, too. Are there further announcements? Okay. Let me sort of indicate how we'll organize the program today. We'll begin with a song, and followed by silence while you can think about things religious. And then we'd like to talk about the meaning of religion to us collectively and individually. Following 2 or 3 minutes of silence and meditation, I'd like to say a few preliminary remarks myself to try to structure discussion and welcome other people's contributions. That is to say, if you have feelings that you think should be taken into account by smaller discussion groups, you're welcome to do it at that point. And then we'll break up into, I suppose, three groups so that everybody has a chance to talk about his or her religious experiences and convictions. And then we'll reconvene share the benefits of these discussions. Okay? So let us sing a real religious song, the Heather song, which is number 12. And those of us who know the melody can sing the first verse and chorus, and the rest of you can join in on successive verses and choruses.
We don't have number 12.
You don't have number 12?
Mm-hmm. Not in the words.
Not in the words.
Well, our music
stand for.
I see. There it is.
Does anybody want to hum? Discussions of religion didn't really go anywhere, and nobody was ever persuaded, and people just got angry with one another. While discussions of science, they went somewhere to persuade somebody, and people weren't angry afterwards. And they had a point there. And I found a later quotation from Lord Chesterfield in the 18th century, a letter to his son. where he said, religion is by no means a proper subject to conversation in mixed company. Anyway, I have a feeling that Prairie sometimes follows this kind of advice. We don't seem to discuss religion, at least in conventional terms, very often. Maybe it's a good idea. I find myself asking myself once in a while what religion means, and whether I'm not religious is a kind of interesting question. Whether or not I come up with the answer yes or no, or if I change my mind about religion, what the meaning of religion is. I think we can discuss the meaning of religion without getting into an argument about words. Obviously, religion can mean many different things to many different people, but the answers to questions about the meaning of religion aren't just a matter of semantics. Obviously, or not so obviously, religion differs from politics, from things ideological, and it differs from science. Or maybe it doesn't, you know. But if you differ, those differences of opinion about that are really, I think, significant. Religion differs from philosophy, I think. Differs from art or poetry. I think it does, okay, but maybe you don't think it does, and it's worth arguing. Similarly, a religion usually has a number of different dimensions, and usually these hang together. Recent sociologists, when they're studying religious behavior, suggested religion might have the following four dimensions. A kind of experiential dimension. Feelings, perceptions, sensations, defined by some religious group as involving communication with what? Divine essence or something like that. It's a perfectly reasonable question to ask you whether you've ever had an experience which you define as uniquely religious. And I would answer certainly yes. Other people, I think a rather large fraction of the American population, maybe it's over half, feel that God has somehow been in direct contact with them, a really personal religious experience. And people like Jimmy Carter know they've been born again, right? But some of us, actually, one of my old anthropology professors knew, who was a real atheist, knew what a religious experience was, though, because it was when he was converted into becoming an anthropologist, sort of like Paul on the road to Damascus, he knew all of a sudden that he was an anthropologist. People have these experiences, although I'm not so sure I'd define some of them as religious. Okay, there's the experiential dimension of religion, there's the ritualistic dimension of religion, like going to church or starting prayer services with announcements, or saying grace at the table, or what the really Orthodox Jews do, right? Things like that. There is, third, an ideological dimension of religion, believing in one God or three gods or no gods, etc. And that overlaps, I suppose, with scientific beliefs about cosmology and evolution and whatnot. And finally, there's a consequential dimension of religion, what it does for people's attitudes and behaviors, and I suppose the ethical aspect, possible political aspect, come in here. What I'm suggesting is that there are lots of questions you can ask ourselves, that we can ask ourselves. I, for example, think it's necessary to differentiate religion from ethics, and certainly necessary to differentiate religion from politics. But again, I think some of you might want to disagree with me. Are there other suggestions about things that we should take into account in smaller group discussions about what religion might mean, should mean, and whether or not you're religious?
I'm still having trouble getting and going. Dictionary. I don't find that any of these things you mentioned are necessarily included. And this troubles me mostly because I don't think it's necessary that we define it, except as we talk about it, we ought to know what we're talking about. And I mean by that that, well, Webster's has another definition for it, and I'm concerned, are we going to need to ignore it? If we are, that's fine. I mean, I don't mind which way we do it, except that we should know which thing we're doing. And Webster has another definition, which is called a personal, just a minute, a cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. Now, that does not necessarily include, I mean, it might include the thing I'm talking about, but it also pretty well excludes belief, it may exclude belief in a supreme being or a supernatural. So, would you like to just get the ground rules laid on that point again? As to whether we're going to consider that also as a religious, as a religion or not?
Well, I think that's a good question to discuss. Is an essential aspect of a religious belief, a belief with a high degree of commitment, ardor, enthusiasm, faith.
Yeah, does it require belief in the supernatural, I think?
Yeah.
I can see this morning getting into a discussion in our small groups of what religion constitutes, and I think I'd rather stick to the way it was announced, which is what does it mean to me in my life? And I'd like to hear what it means to different people in their lives. Whereas we could do a very familiar thing and start arguing about the definition and what should be covered in the discussion and spend a lot of time that way, and I wouldn't like that.
I agree with you. I think that when you're dealing with the concept that nobody really seems to be able to define clearly, better to ask the question, what does it do for you, rather than what is it? Always get private.
The people who want to discuss the metaphysical aspect of what is it, couldn't they go in one group? And the people who want to discuss the ethical aspect of what is it, couldn't they go in another?
That's fair. That's great.
Maybe we can think about it for a second. I'll ask the question, whether you would like to be in a group that, any group can discuss anything, a group that, did you say metaphysical?
Yeah.
What?
Well, just the whole, really nice lifeline philosophical concept of what is the meaning of religion, metaphysical, philosophical sort of way. It's very different from what Mary Lou was talking about.
How many of you would care to join a discussion that includes something about the philosophical meaning of religion, philosophical, social meaning of religion generally, as opposed to them personally? Come on.
I have a job separating them more.
What?
I have a job separating them, because I mean, by hearing the other person's experiences, help differentiate my own philosophical stand, and I want to share.
Switch.
Your own philosophical stand fits in my definition.
Barb?
I understand what Fran is saying, but I think it would be sad that anybody would do what they think is right or wrong just because they would give me a hula hula up there in the sky.
With enthusiasm, yes.
And ardor.
Some, yeah. I care. But anyway.
Who said sky? What about mushrooms?
Anyway.
Good or evil?
I think we have proceeded far enough to unclear. I would suggest, though, we'll break for coffee, and we'll start, let's start four groups. One group over by that bulletin board, one group right up here where Mary Lou is, one group back there where John is now, and a fourth group where the Centies are over there in the corner, and let's have that fourth group, if people are really concerned about philosophical meanings of religion in addition to personal meanings. Drift over there after coffee. Okay, that's about 5 minutes. People should be able to get through themselves.
The other
what? The others can talk about whatever they want to, but they will perhaps start off with personal meanings of religion, personal religious experiences, personal commitments and ardor, or lack of ardor, okay? 5 minutes, and then we'll have about 20 or 25 minutes of discussion, depending on how heated it is, and reconvene.
What you say you wished? I wish I had brought along the talk of Max Gabriel's that ended up with a quotation from Alfred North Whitehead about this very subject, and you would say that it actually, the definition would mean it's the impossible dream.
Oh, that was in Alfred North Whitehead?
Yes, because everything, it was limited. Everything that was said, it was always limited by the opposite. And I wish I'd brought that along because it meant quite a lot to me.
Go ahead. One thing that I think is going to come up with Carter's Carter's period is the separation of church and state to a greater extent. Not because he is outspoken in what he believes religion has done or meant to him, but because I think we're increasingly coming to question real estate involvement, for instance, church property and taxes, and church activities taxed or not. I think Edgewood's bingo thing is in the forefront of an issue. I mean, is this an ethically honest way for this community to support religion? And I find that there's a blurring of the separation of church and state through a lot of these questions now that I wasn't aware of.
I'll get you some more coffee just in case.
Yes. It's fine for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book that Lorena gave me a long time ago that says, "Health shall spring forth." But you know what? I know beforehand what's going to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not my slant toward it at all. I don't aim to be religious in order to be healthy. Just to be better, maybe. Anyway, I find myself being increasingly appreciative of other people's ideas, even as mine are still kind of unformed or hazy. But this thing that Alfred North Whitehead said was very, very interesting, because there's a man that has had great study behind what he thinks. And his feeling apparently was that everything you could say, there was a counter question that was equally valid. I don't think it can be pinned down to a definition. Certainly, it's one thing to one person and another thing to another.
Are you also making the point that what one person may believe firmly, the opposite belief might also have some merit to it?
Well, I don't know whether I'd know what the opposite belief is.
Oh, okay. An entirely different belief might also be.
Yes, I think in many cases an entirely different belief might be equally valid. Certainly, a lot of things that are choices that we have right now have been choices along the great maps of history, and have been valid here and there and sometimes.
Okay! We are... let us form group focus perspective. Hey, read the copy.
And he had groups come to his home on Sunday evenings. Which was a very fine thing for Professor.
We got a circle of... Here, swivel your chair backwards a little bit alongside a stand back there. Yes, Dan, you can
forward. Maybe just as easy.
Because I don't want to be back. You're about to have two circles, huh? Here's your point.
Pull in.
Yeah, pull in so my mother can hear you. There's a chair. Let's throw this chair out and pull in close then.
Yeah, otherwise, I can't still see it. Overlap this conversation.
Pull in as close as you can.
Let's keep going. Let's see what happens.
One thing that's been bothering me a little bit, and I don't know to find what I find personally a little bit difficult. And Carter, I guess, has sort of made this more. I've been more aware of it. Not that the born again thing bothers me, but he's been very outspoken, and it's become a common knowledge where his religious position is. Okay, that's his right. But we haven't had as much of this in the political arena before Carter, at least not that I remember. And this is, I was saying a little while ago to Mary Lou that I think the whole question of religious practice in political life is more of it going on. Such things as tax, whether there's a question of whether church property that's bringing in income ought to be taxed or not. And this has been raised. I find it personally an affront to go by Edgewood with that big sign bingo every Thursday, because I find this is not, I do not believe that this is the way religious practice ought to be subsidized. By public bingo.
Each of us can do our own practicing.
Yeah, but I mean, these are things that I see in our political arena right now that I think the whole idea of separation of church and state is being kind of chiseled away in certain little edges, and I kind of wonder about this.
Hermine, I hope no one responds to you on that, because I think it could take us away from this. I'm so curious to hear what people's personal religious points of view are, that I'm scared if they pick up on what you've started that it won't ever get back to that.
Okay. Yeah, let's make it very personal.
Yeah, I would really like that.
Well, then I'd say my personal problem right now is this.
That's fair.
That's fair.
God hasn't come to help you right away.
I can start if we wait.
Sure.
I had, I mentioned this some weeks ago, I had what I consider a religious experience. There was actually no doubt about it. When I was quite young, I was 20, and it reformed or remade my whole life so that I, you might say, discovered my whole center. And as a consequence, ever since then, I've never had any trouble with religious groups. What does religion mean? All of these ideologies that tend to pop up, and then all the forms that follow them. These things become superfluous after you have something what I consider real, central to the being. This is a question of whether you agree with it.
And
I'll just tell you what I think.
It didn't all then proceed to come clear.
Let me finish. You can say what you want. I'm not trying to convince you of anything. I'm just telling you what I found. And it created such a solid center for myself as far as understanding the universe, understanding what people mean when they use the word God, understanding myself, understanding other people, and how I relate to all of it. It was merely something for myself. I'm not peddling it. I'm certainly willing to share it and share ideas with receptive people, but I refuse to argue.
Position is for me a difficult one to maintain. The standard that's implied in the idea that I have, the behavior that's called for, is difficult for a mere human being to maintain. And that may lead to search for some different, more tenable explanation of the universe. But for the time being, I have that, and it provides some definition for me in the universe, and some guides for me to behave within the universe. And I'm glad to say that I got here at last. It was a long time ahead.
What was your best experience, though? I don't know if I remember.
I'm not sure of it. I can communicate it so that you understand it. It was a transcending experience, an out-of-body experience, actually out of a universe experience. And I just have to say this, I don't know how else to say it because of my limitation of words. I suppose it's called rebirth. If you want to say, what do the words mean? I can tell you what, in certain words, that I experience, whether or not those words have the same meaning to you, or whether if you don't have the same experience, you can know it. See, that's the problem. I hesitated in talking about it for many years for that simple reason. But I found now that I don't mind talking about it if the person doesn't understand it. They don't understand it. I would attempt to explain as much as possible. It's a totally revitalizing, fulfilling, renewing experience. I don't know how else to say it. And all of these words fall short the minute that I use them because words are inadequate. It's the total feeling of oneness, of love, of being related to everybody. It took me out of all the triteness of family, society, all of these things, and took me above that so that the world became my family. And so I've operated that way since.
And was it a flash, or was it a birth?
Oh, no, it was quite a while. No, it was not, no. It happened, I couldn't tell you exactly how long it was, because I didn't have a watch with me. And it happened at night when I was really deeply involved in trying to come to some conclusion. A lot of things were happening in my life at that time. And so it happened somewhere between the 6th and 7th of January. Well, I don't know. It may have been minutes. There's no way.
It wasn't over a month.
No, it was one night. And I don't know how long it took. But it so completely remade me that it wasn't like drug high where you go up and come down. I never came down. I came back out of choice. I suppose that if I didn't come back, I would have physically died. But my only purpose really for coming back was this was so fantastic a thing beyond anything I thought of. It was just, it struck me deeply.
And then haven't died. That's very much like what these books I've been reading, where they have a feeling of oneness with life and breath or whatever. And oneness means a physical, metaphysical thing or something like this. And then a choice over whether to come back. And I keep thinking there's going to be people who are not religious. I mean, quite ordinary, not religious people who've had heart attacks or whatever. I mean, it's interesting.
accepted it very much in control. I just experienced absolutely no fear from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be a very fearful experience for a person who wasn't prepared for it. I think I must have been prepared for it.
How do you know you weren't asleep?
Asleep? Oh, gosh. I've never been so awake in my life. Because I've had all kinds of sleep experiences. I've had archetypal dreams. I've had regular dreams. I know it all. And there's no comparison. It's the most alive thing I've ever
experienced. I believe you,
but
I'm skeptical.
Well, you're skeptical. I don't know why you're
skeptical. I believe you when you say this, but I personally...
It's just amazing. Because I guess I was enough and still am enough to practice. To want to always check things out. And there was no way that I could check this thing out, find anything wrong with it. It was no dream state. It was nothing wishy-washy. It was nothing out of control. None of those things. And the choice to return was my own. And it wasn't as though the choice was given to me. I just decided. It wasn't, now, do you want to go or do you want to stay or anything like that? It was just that I guess if I hadn't had this overwhelming feeling of sharing, would have been no reason for coming back. There was no attachment.
You said that this occurred in a period of your life when there are many complex situations.
Yeah, I was questioning religion. I was ready to toss it out. I was sick of that crap. And I was also intensely involved in my profession of art in school. I was doing research on the side. I was fasting out of school, not having any money, and I think all the ingredients for this kind of thing were there. I was studying the teachings of Christ at the time. I was very interested in what this person brought and discovered some very significant things. And as a consequence, I've never been able to join a church afterwards. I've never been able to get into religion per se. Because all of them are just segments or fragments of the whole. And I guess I feel I must relate to the whole, or there isn't anything else to relate to, and see all of it as the whole.
I'm going to present what I thought about before I came here, and it's quite different, boys. I see religion as, for me, it's what set of ideas I can take seriously enough that they'll cause me to behave for the benefit of the tribe rather than for the benefit of myself individually. And secondly, the nearest thing for me that I see as appropriate to guide my behavior, and I must say I don't use it much, but the one thing that could really take hold and force me to behave in a way against my own self-interest and for the benefit of the tribe is the general set of ideas that Hugh Elders presented several years ago. I've got it in written form in a speech that he gave to some Catholics in St. Louis, at which time he called upon these sisters and priests to form a new holy order, which would be dedicated to the preservation not of life, but the preservation of the variety of life. And so that the question of, I'm seeing the tribe now as not just a human tribe, but the spaceship Earth. And I think that a religion that would really influence me would be one that caused the human people to restrain our destruction of the spaceship Earth, for the benefit not only of future generations of humans, but also of the great, beautiful interplay of life and non-life that this spaceship consists of. And I don't say that I'm living according to this, but if I were to move in a religious direction, it would have to be in that sort of a direction, I believe.
Sort of the precious genetic material that's here hadn't ought to be destroyed.
That sort of thing.
You can't think of it as part of your responsibility think we get pretty focused.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has everything to do with preservation of resources to the value of all creatures here.
Or of all types of creatures.
All types of creatures here and now. Each one is important. Not to say that it has to keep on expanding in increasing numbers of individuals of that type.
Right.
So
in fact, that's a counter.
That's a counter.
Yeah.
Come to people that make them suddenly change their internal feelings and their lives, like making what they call making a great decision. That happens to people.
The only thing I might add is that trip for me was gave me such a complete sense of security within. I started traveling then. I was by myself all over the world. I just offered you a pretty fantastic thing because of this whole thing taking place. I probably wouldn't have done that already. So it's, and I'm not pushing it off on anybody. I'm just telling you what happened to me. And I can't be argued out of it because there's no way that I could be argued out of it. Because it happened so many years ago, and I've done so many things and experienced so many things since then that I'm sure I could have been folded by this time if there was any. I'm very good at being much a skeptic as for me, maybe more of a skeptic.
I find after reading and analyzing them,
can't really detect their origin, and I don't know that they have a degree of universality that to me would indicate a religious experience. My transcendental sectarian boundaries, you see what I'm saying?
I think
Mormons
are universal.
Then maybe a religious experience is not as common as most people would have us believe, and they are born again, but yet they're born again with a very narrow framework. I'm just curious to try to get at what this religious experience is. How does the transcend everyday experience something that you might have once in a lifetime, or is it, what is it? How do you define it?
I don't think it can define it. You know, I grew up in a religion that was very structured, Catholicism. So what I was thinking is my religion, so-called, was imposed on me from outside. And it took me till like 6 years ago to get past that. And it came through a humanistic laboratory experience. And it was such an opening thing for me. And here I was, about the last day of it, standing on a dock out on a lake, you know, and I felt there were no boundaries, you know, just no boundaries. And I was the center of my universe, and the universe wasn't, you know, I didn't belong in it. I was the center, and I went out from it. You know, and there was the wind with me, and the water with me, and everything. I felt part of that, very part of it, too. I don't know if it's religious, but I felt a real broad experience, no boundaries. And it was really good, and there was a quietness. So I can't say that a religious experience would have any boundaries. It kind of defines it. It has an outgoing thing to it, for me. I can't even say that I could define a religious, but I felt very euphoric, and I felt very good. And I could come back. There was a sense of coming back to the world.
But you didn't feel after that?
No, I didn't have to. There was a very quiet, very content, very satisfying sense of being.
I was so speaking different. I thought I had to, you see, it wasn't enough to come back myself from talking to people. I had to make everybody else talking now. I was absolutely different. You know, I organized cell groups and everybody did the pray, and I went around the country. And you know, maybe it's that age. It's very, very different to me than what you're talking about, which is although I don't think that the young Christian or whatever is inauthentic. I think it's probably helpful to me that I hate to make it to people I'm
not
Oh, well, you see, I thought it had to. I thought I had to make everybody else share my awareness. I was asked to think about it. But maybe that's the insecurity of that age. Whereas now, if I'm just having more, as you say, and you do not go rushing off and try to...
Everybody else, you know, all the so-called structured religions, that's all right. You can be that way. You can do what you want to do. But I don't have to push anything of what I... You know, so it holds a quietness for me. Religion holds a quietness and a respect for everything around.
It's kind of nice knowing that daddy up there is gone, too.
Oh,
I mean, that was the greatest relief of my life when God died.
Well, isn't it also kind of the context in which you find yourself when the experience comes? If you're in a evangelical context, then you interpret the experience in that context and go out to convert the world or whatever. If you're in a humanistic context, you know, that's almost anathema to it, and it becomes the other kind of thing. So it's sort of where you are in life when it happens. And, you know, if you are fortunate and can, you know, have it in one place and carry it with you as you grow, you know, and become, you know, more of a human being all along. I come out of an ecumenical Christian background and have had, you know, assorted experiences, which at whatever stage I would have called mystical or converting or whatever. Some of them quite dramatic, but I'm sure quite typical, like the I was nearly killed in an automobile accident, and, you know, all kinds of experiences related to that, that, you know, I was sure was God, and was very much in the Christian church context. And yet that same kind of awareness and has changed for me now from an awareness of belonging to, quote, church, to humanity, you know, becoming one with the universe and so forth. I've, you know, and yet there are many things that were highly valuable to me, and I hope not offensive to other people, you know, at earlier stages, that I don't know why they aren't there now. You know, I haven't been a churchgoer in years, and yet, you know, that was a vital part of my life at one point. Worship, to me, has always been a context of religious experience, yet I don't worship anymore, you know. So they're all confusions along those lines, too. Faith, finding out God's will. Well, what in the world was that that I used to worry so much about?
I began to wonder what it would be like to always be in a tent.
Okay, I'll take it. I want to say that for me it's been a great pleasure and honor to be amongst Unitarians and learn how people think, because I have, at this long last, I know more about my father than I ever did. I understand that I never did before. He thought that way. And he would not be welcome in his own family because of that. But we didn't have an opportunity to go into a Unitarian church. We almost did when we moved from Cincinnati up to Columbus. There was a Universalist church that we could have gone to, but it would have meant taking the family on the streetcar, and we could go to a Congregational church by walking. And that's where I was brought up, was in the Congregational church. And that was pretty cool. So that's a cross between the old Celtic and the North. Anyway, I do understand my father so much better now. And
notion that came through very quickly, that people are at different stages.
people that disagree, like throwing out the baby with the bathwater. It's just not the negative. It's not much sense at all. But when people are ready, they'll go.
Yeah, I found that coming back a great appreciation for the hymns. You know, there's a lot of value in them. And then, you know, I used to reject all that at one time. And I was, you know, right in the middle of it playing the church organ for all the church services, you know, and it was my big thing. And then I had to go reject all that structure. Now I can come back and look at it and see it is something that some people need.
Well, I still don't know what to think because I know about 100 of hymns by heart, and I'm always singing them all over their mouth, and they're, you know, they're very Christian. They know I'm not. I always sing "Awake My Soul, Stretch Every Nerve and Bath." and presses vigor on, a heavenly race, a man's ideal, and an immortal crown. It goes on and on.
I get very mad when people tamper with the words.
So you can't even rewritten the whole book.
I just terrible. I think I have wondered at the power and need of church building. And the times that I've had opportunity, I like to go to the medieval and Renaissance church buildings. And it's marvelous the amount of human energy that went into the cathedral in England at a time when there was such poverty and terrible deprivation. That though there was something that was so terribly important to hear, that the monkey was on the back so badly, or people had put stone on stone that way. And I wondered if that could be. And then I look at the first New Church Madison, and I think how much that cost and how much, you know, love and energy went into that, and what a problem that's been. And it's just a small example of the church building that's been done right here in City. And as a reflection of human need, isn't that misguided?
It cheers you up if you go and look at the medieval and Renaissance cathedral again. There's a great deal of nature worship that's going on while they're pretending to be Christian. I mean, it's probably
worse. Bring in the decoration.
They pretend it's decoration, but the good old witches and good old witches' friends
are
putting a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, but I'm talking about just the sheer energy that puts those stones up.
Christian energy.
500 feet.
Some of it's good old pagan energy.
All right.
One of Mr. Gabriel's talks on the announcer, and I'm going to forget something. I can't think of words or the names of things when I'm going to that Stonehenge. And how far back that goes, beyond our memories.
We have no knowledge that that had anything to do with religion.
And they had techniques that are very, very present.
You see, that was astronomy. That's what's interesting. And that thing was aimed to pick up. Well, no, it was an electromagnetic force. At least we did.
Well, it was more than a hunch, though.
Oh, yeah.
It was a structured knowledge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure, but that's why people think that people have landed in those other places.
What was it aimed at? What was it aimed at? What other place was it
record of
pointed at?
Certain places in regards to real around too. I don't know which they are, Jupiter. So it will come into that opening, and you will be focusing on it in a certain day, a certain time, a certain year.
Okay.
Longhand decoded is
That's just a taking intellectual way.
Well, this has been part of accepted as the theory of the private
What was the theory?
Stonehenge decoded. That it was an analysis of the equinox and the season, the position of the moon. In other words, it's an astronomical record.
It's
a fascinating book that he's done. An American, I think it's from Harvard, in the astronomy department, was computer analysis of the angles. by Stone, rejected it. And this theory was not accepted. We were in Stonehenge in 68, and my husband had some knowledge of this, and we asked the guy, this theory isn't accepted. And 2 years later, the Royal Academy of Sciences did accept it.
I was there in 71, and that was, in the tourist literature and so forth at that point.
So if I understand, if you would oppose the meeting at this time, we can just go ahead until we decide to move. We do have to go ahead.